last days gets to put up with me. We say good morning to Pierre McGuire from NBC Sports. Hello, Pierre. How are you?
Good. I'm excellent, Steve. Good morning to you. Hello, Sean.
Good morning, Pierre.
Well, let's start with the news coming out of Alberta here, and I'll ask you this way. You went to the Edmonton bubble for the NHL, and I find it interesting that they want to have everything in place by the 6th of December, the IIHF and all the parties involved, because I would assume there's going to be another round of really stringent testing for everybody after that, with everybody that's going to go to get to the bubble. How many times did you test, Pierre, in the process before you got into Edmonton?
Before I got to Edmonton, I had one test. A lab from Montreal came to my house because I was in quarantine in Tromelo. A lab from Montreal came to my house and tested me, and I couldn't get on the plane till I was COVID-free. So if that test had come in negative, or positive, excuse me, then I could not have gotten on the plane. It came in negative. I flew to Edmonton, and the day that I arrived at Edmonton, I got COVID tested immediately.
Pierre, maybe follow or give the, I know you went through it when you were there, just some of the protocols once you were in Edmonton, how that was handled, and I'm assuming this will be the same thing for the World Junior.
Anytime you were in a public place, you had to wear a face mask. The only time your mask could come off was when you were eating or drinking. That was it. That was all. Every other place you were, you had to have your mask on. Unless you were working like I was, calling a game, you could take your mask off to speak into your microphone. That was number one. Number two, you could not leave your hotel unless you had your temperature taken. If it came in hot, meaning high, you had to go see a nurse practitioner who was right in the lobby of your hotel. She would retake your temperature. If it was hot again, you got dispatched to your room. If it was, you know, normal, they would put a wristband on you saying that you had been retested, but that your temperature was normal. As soon as you left the lobby of the hotel, the mask obviously had to go back on, and then you had to walk between two chain link fences right to the building. You could never have contact with outside people, and you were in the bubble from your room all the way to the rink.
Also, just when you arrived, was it 48 hours that you had to stay in your room, Pierre? As far as
no, it was long. That's a good question. It was longer than that.
Okay.
It was 4 days.
Four days. Okay.
So you arrive and you're 4 days in your room and you can't get out. And you're getting COVID tested every day, by the way. And you can't get out until your fourth COVID test is negative.
Okay.
Okay. Well, and that leads in. I know what Simmer's thinking here. 14-day quarantine period now. And I assume they're staying in their rooms in Red Deer because they're talking about doing meetings on Zoom and maybe doing workouts within each of their hotel rooms. You know, mentally, how tough is that going to be for 14 days in Red Deer for all involved to quarantine that long in a hotel room?
Really hard. The one thing I would say is I did it for the 4 days in Edmonton. I worked out in my room every day, and it felt like I had been freed from jail when I could get to the gym the fifth day. I'm not kidding you. So it's really hard because, especially if you have a roommate. I had no roommate, and I had a big room. I had a big, really big room, so I was fortunate. It will be very difficult. I will tell you that right now, especially for 14 days. I was only looking at four. They're talking about 14. That's going to be very difficult. Now, I don't know what the protocols are, if they're going to be allowed to walk within the confines of the floor they're on in their hotel. I have no idea. I don't know if it's just Team Canada in that hotel or not. I don't know. So that makes it a little bit more difficult, too. But it won't be easy, Steve, I can tell you that.
I take a lot of baths. I like baths. So I'd want a nice big bathtub.
Well, there might not be a bath. You're a shower.
And we were saying from an exercise standpoint, Pierre, because I'm just trying to think of it. And there's a lot of stuff. And I don't really lift weights. I do a lot of body squats and push-ups and all that. I would assume with Hockey Canada, either individually or in a rotation, would you probably send around some exercise bikes as well to try to end up doing something? Because I got to think from a cardio standpoint, boy, there's only so much you can do in your room.
Well, that's a great question and a very good point. And the truth of the matter is they do allow bikes, and I would imagine that there'll be more than enough of an excess of bikes around Red Deer, just because the Red Deer Rebels are there and the Sutters are, you know, obviously our owners of that team. Well, Brent is the owner of that team.
And even Edmonton's right up the road, right?
If they want to ship some. Yeah. I mean, it's not that far, but there'll be plenty of bikes.
Yeah.
I can tell you one thing, that if you requested a bike in Edmonton, you would have one in your room. But most of the people just went to the gym in the hotel I was in. I don't know about the other hotels, but here's the other thing. When I was there for the NHL bubble, there were three hotels involved. So it was a little bit more chaotic. It was spread out a little bit more. In this instance, at the World Junior, they're only going to have two hotels. So the third hotel, the hotel I stayed in, will not be involved in the pod, in the bubble. It'll only be two. One would be the Sutton Place, and the other will be the JW Marriott.
A couple days ago, we wanted to get to this yesterday, but we had other things to talk about. So let's sink our teeth into here. You know, Steve Dryden, who you know well from your days at TSN, put together the all-time World Junior team. And I'll start it off this way. Yeah. Is it always Peter Forsberg for you if you talk about all-time? Like, the stats, 14 games played at the World Juniors. Forsberg had 42 points playing for Sweden. But, you know, countries have come a long way since then as well.
Yeah, one of those games, you'd have to look it up, I think it was against Japan.
And I think okay.
He and Naslin had, I think they had 12 points each. You'd have to look it up, but okay. I think there was one game against Japan where they just ran wild. So that would be a disclaimer, but I would agree Forsberg is right at the top. Pavel Bure, I mean, I don't know what the list is. Steve does.
He's number two. He's number two, Pavel Bure.
Yeah, Pavel Bure would have to be there. Steve does meticulous work. I'm telling you, I've never seen a man pay more attention to little things in the hockey world than he does. He's phenomenal at that. So I would say Pavel Bure would have to be in there. I got to think Fedorov and McGillney are part of that list. I have to think Jágr and Reichel are part of that list. You know, I think about Crosby and Bergeron, especially from 05, have to be part of that list. I mean, geez, Louise, the World Junior, I've been going to it since 89, or watching it since 89, but going to it from probably around 89. I missed a few years when I was coaching, but I still watched it even when I was coaching in the league. But I mean, I've been watching it regularly since 89, so there are a lot of really good players that have gone through that tournament.
And anytime you do these lists, Pierre, it's just fun discussion. I don't even want to say a critique. The other problem is a lot of the better 18-year-olds go right into the NHL, never play again, right? Where, you know, you have some older guys that come through. My only critique on the list, and I say this as a teammate and then watch them the following year, in my time, and that goes back to 87, I've watched and I attended from 95 to 2008. I've never seen a better goaltending performance than Jimmy Waite, both in the year I played. I know we got disqualified. That following year in Russia, he hands down stole the gold medal. And they have he's not on there, and Manny Legacy is. And I don't want to take anything away from Manny, but I just really look at Jimmy and think, man, like I'll argue that his performance in Moscow that year puts him right against any of the best players, let alone goaltenders.
Well, I wasn't at that event. I was coaching college hockey at the time, but one of our players, Joey Day, was actually playing for the American team at the time. So, and I eventually ended up coaching Joey with the Hartford Whalers. He's really hard-nosed, tough in your face player. But I was following the tournament, but I would agree with you on Jimmy Waite. But the legacy story, everybody still talks about that. He was drafted by Hartford, you know, undersized roly-poly goalie that really stood out and played unbelievable.
Yeah, for sure.
But you're right. No, it's more than fair. I think it's fair to have that discussion. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I do think Jimmy Waite gets overlooked a little bit there because it's before the advent of really full-on TV coverage, if you think about it. It's before TSN got their hands in the tournament. It really turned it into what it is today. TSN. And I'm proud to say that I worked there, but I can tell you one thing, TSN has done a magnificent job with that property, just an amazing job with that property.
Yeah, that first memory, I think you'd say the same thing, is Rochester, Minnesota, and that's Mike Moffitt, and I believe that might have been the first year we actually sent a national team versus, for people that didn't realize, the Memorial Cup champion from the year before. Not only would go, Pierre, but I also remember one of the years Regina Pats went, and they ended up taking a full line here from Ottawa, including the great Sean Simpson, Yvon Jolly, and Jimmy Fox ended up going with Regina at the time.
Yeah, that Sean Simpson you're talking about was a heck of a player over in Europe, too. I played against
him. Yeah, for sure. Hell of a coach, too.
Oh, my gosh, was he a talented player, though. I'm telling you what, he was really good protecting the puck. Yeah, no, you're right on. I mean, those are all great historical memories. And that's the thing about this tournament. Every year, for instance, you'd have to look it up, Steve, for me right now, but I believe Sidney Crosby is the youngest player to ever score a goal for Canada. And that happened in a game in Helsinki, Finland. He was 16. I don't know how many 16-year-olds have ever played in that tournament, but I would tell you one thing. Michael Frolik's probably the only one that comes to mind, as I do it off the top of my head, that was able to actually have an impact in the tournament. So that's just one memory that I have that I think about when he scored in Helsinki. I just remember, wow, this is historical. You know, when you're there, you're watching, you're going, this has never happened before.
Yeah.
Jay Bomeister, you think about him, you know, playing as a 16-year-old coming out of Medicine Hat, and everybody's like, wow, is he going to be good enough or strong enough to play? And he sure was. He absolutely was. So, you know, again, you look at all these different players over time and you say, what an amazing thing for a young for a young man to go through. Just amazing.
And as we're on that, Lloydy, I'll just have some fun as well. And this is part of these tournaments. And at times I find at junior levels when numbers are retired, sometimes it's guys that go on to be stars in the NHL. But when you go back to the junior tournaments, and I've attended so many, Pierre, I think of the best team effort I've ever seen was the year that Finland won with a very thin group, and they had that top line of Olli Jokinen, Hagman, and Sumavari, where they quite clearly, and these were, this should be recognized, right? Like they were, and the goaltender, I think, was the fella that went to, ended up playing in Buffalo for a little while, but like I kind of look back and say, boy, you should recognize those things, because to me, that might have been one of the biggest upsets of all time.
Well, I would agree with that. I'll give you another one. In 04, at the bronze medal game, I'm not kidding. I wish Gord Miller was on the line with us because he would tell you. My reaction was we were watching the Finns, the bronze medal game day in the morning skate, and I was like, this is the hardest pregame skate I've ever seen. The coach must be furious with them that they have to play the Russians, and Ovechkin in particular was right in his prime, going in into his draft year, by the way, and going into this game fatigued, and the Finns won the game.
I couldn't believe it.
I was like, what are they doing? They're killing their guys.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of the stories I remember. I remember Keith Lane doing the same thing at the 2011 World Junior in Buffalo. He beat the bejesus out of his team. I'm telling you, like, I've never seen a morning skate that hard. And he got their attention. And I talked to Charlie Coyle, who was on that team, about it. He goes, we had no idea whether we were going to have any legs or not to play. And eventually they won the bronze medal that year. And it was amazing to me. Again, those are the two things. There's so many over time. I remember Jordan, like, these are not really well documented, but Jordan Tutu and his performance in Halifax and how it got the attention of all the NHL guys who were watching the tournament that year. And I remember going into Detroit, and, you know, they had a star power team at that time in 2003. Guys like Holland, Iserman, and Litcher, they were really good, really, really good. And some of the Red Wing players are like, do you think he's going to be able to do that in the NHL? Talking about the way he hit people. And Gord and I were like, this guy's fearless. He probably will. And they knew he was a Nashville pick, and they were like, oh, man, he's coming in to play against us. You know, so guys pay attention. They really do.
I remember in Halifax, that was the year when our friend who's on our broadcast for the Sens, Brendan Bell and Jay Harrison.
Oh, yeah.
And who was the other?
No-name defense. They were the Carlos.
No, there's three Leafs. Yeah, there you go. That was the other Leaf, right?
I think Ian White might have been on the team, too.
There you go. Yeah,
Ian White was on the team, 100%.
Yeah. A lot of Leaf picks on
had
that.
Had the big fat goalie here, the Russian goalie, Medvedev, the Calgary pick.
Hey? Well, that's right.
So we have to make you laugh on this one because it's all in good fun, nothing personal here. But we're at the airport the next day. Everybody's, you know, the airport in Halifax is jammed, and Medvedev's there, and he's clearly had a very exciting night because he doesn't look very good. And one of the Canadian players, and I forgot who it was, looks at him and says, why'd you have another donut?
Schoenfeld.
It fit perfectly into that time. It was just really funny. I was like, oh boy, this could turn into a street fight quick.
Oh man. Now I brought this up. We had a little World Junior discussion on the show yesterday as well, just Simmer and myself, and I'm kind of putting you on the spot a little bit here.
Yeah.
But is there a name with Hockey Canada, just the Canadian teams over the years? Give me a couple of names that spring to mind that, man, what dominant player they were at this tournament, junior player, and just stood out, and for whatever reason, didn't have the NHL career to follow up here. I'll lead off here. I was so impressed with Marty Murray in Red Deer in the mid-90s. Where are you going?
Well, so Marty would be one. The thing that happened to Marty just wasn't very big. I remember being on a golf junket with Marty, and he could really hit a golf ball, man, oh, man, and he had the nice draw. And he just wasn't overly large, and the red line was still in play then, and he was really quick and dynamic, but as a smaller player, he just couldn't get free a lot in the NHL. So he would definitely be one of them. There's one that actually, he's still playing, and he played in Ottawa, Tyler Ennis. Tyler Ennis, to me, was an unbelievable junior player with Medicine Hat, and he started out his career really well, but then it just kind of mainlined. It never got to the star level that I thought it would, but he was a player. I remember World Junior and also Junior where he was like, whoa, this guy's really good. And he's had a really long career, but I think size more than anything else kind of dictated that he wasn't going to be able to get to the star level.
Yeah, mine would be actually one of the kids I drafted, but Nolan Baumgartner was certainly a very good player on those teams.
Did injuries play a role in that? Though,
yeah, it certainly did. You know what? That was the theory at the time when you'd put it into the defenseman's idea that if you're 6'1", you have to be 200 pounds. And he was forced to bulk up. And then the other issue at that time, Pierre, everyone was wearing those stupid Donzi shoulder pads.
Yeah.
And the amount of injuries they ended up causing in shoulder separations. And, yeah, it certainly was a factor. And at the end of the day, a little bit of a one-speed player. You know, just wasn't quite dynamic enough. But certainly a super guy and doing a nice job as assistant coach in Vancouver now.
I'll tell you what, he did a phenomenal job with that defense this year. And if you look at the development of Quinn Hughes in particular and how he shielded him, in a lot of different moments and games, I think Nolan's done a great job, and he really helped Chris Tanev a lot, obviously, and Tanev's now moved on to Calgary. I looked at Oscar Fantenberg this year in Vancouver, and I was like, wow, this guy's really improved from where he used to be, and I think Nolan deserves a lot of credit in the development of a lot of those Vancouver Canucks defensemen. So, no, I would agree with you. And he definitely did not have the career that a lot of people thought he would have. Sean Bell is another one, if you really want to go down that road.
I mentioned that name yesterday, Pierre. That's funny because I was just trying to grasp for stuff where, you know, he's such a big guy that could skate and physically was pretty dominant at the World Junior.
If you saw him in a dressing room, Steve, without his equipment on and just, you know, a T-shirt and a pair of shorts, you'd say this guy's a running back in the NFL. I mean, his body type was unbelievable, and his fast twitch muscle fiber was off the charts. Like, he was so quick. His first two steps were crazy fast. And for whatever, and he played on the 05 team, and he was, you know, a very, very important player on that team. They were all very good. That was a great team. I would say the best team Canada ever sent, just because we had the lockout that year. But it never materialized. He was a first-round pick of St. Louis. It never materialized in the NHL.
And even to sum that up, Lloyd, the name I brought up, I mean, Jimmy Waite never had near the career anyone and went into Chicago at a time when he was going to be the starter. Next thing you know, they sign Eddie Belfour, and hey, who's this Hasek guy that just appeared in town as well?
Yeah. Well, the Hasek trade is a long story, but Mike Keenan made that trade, and you know, when Hasek got moved from Chicago to Buffalo, and everybody's still wondering how did that happen.
For Stefan Beauregard. What's also interesting, though, Pierre,
Eric Daze was the pick, right?
Yeah, well, it ended up being that. And they took LeCompte in the first round, so they obviously made up for the mistake. But the other part with the Hasek, I mean, he was available in expansion, too, and nobody took him, Pierre.
No, but nobody did.
Every year, Michael Pavanka would come to training camp and tell David Poile, there's this goaltender over in Czech Republic, Czechoslovakia, that's really good. And I guess at the time, Jack Button, whoever, obviously if you went and watched his style and thought it wouldn't end up working out, but he was player of the year, I think, 7 years in a row in Czechoslovakia before he came over.
Yeah, well, in part of Bica where he played, he was like the king of the town. It was amazing to go over there. But the one thing I'd tell you, in the 92 final when he beat Chicago, he played in two of the four games. And I would just tell you that he stood out. I mean, we could have won game four massively. I think we ended up winning 7-5. It could have been 14-3 if it hadn't been for Hasek. I'm telling you, he was crazy, crazy good. And so, you know, again, you look at it over time. How do guys end up in different areas? It's kind of like what Sean says. Scouts get a book on a player and they say, I don't think he can do this, I don't think he can do that. And eventually they make it, and you're like, well, what happened with he couldn't do this and he couldn't do that?
Yeah, for sure.
And now we haven't hammered you with this. Last one for you from me today, Pierre, for obvious reasons, because there really hasn't been much news. But it's Friday. It's another Friday. And we've been saying for a number of weeks, well, things got to happen soon here if we're going to hit Jan 1 for the NHL or what have you. Do you have anything to add at the end of the week of where you think it stands?
There's not a lot of optimism from agents, I can tell you that. I've been in touch with a lot of agents. You know, yesterday was kind of a neat day. You have agents and managers and friends of yours. You're either texting them to say Happy Thanksgiving or they're texting you or calling you. And there hasn't been a lot going on. I know agents aren't overly optimistic for a January or a mid-January start date, to be perfectly frank. There are some management people that are not very optimistic. I know I shared with you guys earlier in the week that the GMs have kind of been taken out of the parcel here. They haven't really been shared information from their ownership group. So not doesn't mean all of them, but some of them. And I would say a good portion of them haven't. So that's not usually a recipe of, you know, enlightenment. I would say that, you know, again, this is not going to be easy to get this thing back on the rails by January 15th. I would say very, very difficult.
Is this not Rocky V, though, where the league allows with silence all of this information negativity from the agents to filter to the players, to everybody else at his doomsday, and then all of a sudden we have a deal done, Pierre? I mean, this is almost always the way it ends up going.
You're fair to say that, yeah. And I think it's a good point, but here's what I would say. I know there's a group of players, and it's not appropriate to share who they are. They're really mad. And
are they all Americans? Or
No.
I'm teasing. I'm teasing.
No, but I'm just saying, no, there are a group of players that are really angry about what's gone on, and a lot of them have a lot to say. They're very powerful people in this situation, and I think they're going to stick close to their guns. Now, the one thing we've always talked about, I think this is really important because Steve brought it up. 48 games has kind of always been the Mendoza line for how we look at this for an NHL season, where people can say that's an appropriate season. And if you think about it, if there are no fans in the stands, would an owner rather play 60 games and have to pay over the course of that time, or 48 games? But they're not going to have fans. So it kind of looks, doesn't mean it's going to, because I'm just going off the top of my head here, because we've had 48 games two previous times. I wouldn't be surprised if it gets back at 48 games whenever they decide 48 games can start. But I would say that's probably more likely to start at the end of January, the beginning of February.
All right. Well, maybe we'll have some news in the coming days and next week. Always a pleasure. Fun spending the week with you, Pierre. We'll talk to you again down the road. You got the big man coming back up on Monday. So you enjoy your weekend. Enjoy Tremblant.
Yeah, you did a great job, Steve. Thanks very much. It was a delight talking with you. Sean, take care of yourself. Have a great weekend, everybody. Stay safe. Enjoy your friends and family.